This is The Huddle.
This is what we do.
Every Thursday from noon to 2.
Presented by DUIHeroes.com.
The Huddle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are going in the trenches with Ray Roberts to talk about what the Seahawks offensive line can do going forward against Tennessee, and also what we saw against Indy. Don't forget to look back a little bit. Ray, how are you?
How about you guys?
Fantastic. I mean, I'm going to start with kind of a really obvious one, but you've got a lot of insight here too, having watched both of these centers in training camp. So Ethan Posick placed on the injured reserve with a sprained knee. He'll be out a minimum of 3 games. That means that this team is going to turn to Kyle Fuller as their starting center. Ray, what'd you see from Kyle either in camp and through the season, or excuse me, preseason?
Yeah. So I've always, from the very beginning of training camp, I thought Kyle offered a stronger, more stable player at that position. Ethan, as much as I love him, he's not the most overpowering player. He's more of a position type blocker, so he's not going to just be a road grader and drive people off the ball. I was a little bit concerned when they were rotating them during the Indianapolis game, because I just felt like those guys needed to get into a rhythm. They just need to pick a dude and let him get into a rhythm with those two guards. So then you start to figure out each other's strengths and weaknesses, and where you can, on certain plays, where the center's going to need extra help, or, really building that chemistry. When you're rotating guys in like that, when you haven't had those kind of live reps, it's kind of hard to do that, and everyone's a little bit off. So I think that Cal has an opportunity to kind of settle in and get into a rhythm with those two guys to be an effective center for the Seahawks. Mm.
Hey, Ray, I thought about you. There was a play, and it was the 33-yard run by Chris Carson, where that one kind of stopped at the line of scrimmage. But Gabe Jackson, I think he was coming off a double team, and then he went over and blocked another guy. And I thought, number one, he just rooted that guy up. I think it was that Grover Stewart guy. And then the other thing was, I just thought the coordination with Carson, just being patient and waiting for him to execute that block, was just a beautiful thing, Ray. I got a tear in my eye, and I'm sure you did too as an offensive lineman.
It was awesome because, like, when I was watching the film of Gabe Jackson, that was the thing that he was awesome at. He was great at being able to secure the down lineman with the double team, whether it's with the tackle or with the center. And then he was able to always get himself up to the second level defender in a way that he could, you weren't chasing, but his body was in a position to actually make the block. And a lot of that boils down to, like, technique, your footwork, your pad level, keeping square, taking the proper steps so that you can set yourself up to be able to get to the second level in a way that you can make an impact like that. And then Chris Carson just does a great job of knowing when to just run really hard downhill and just hit the pile and move the pile, and when to be patient to allow those a hole like that to open. And it was a beautiful thing because it did look like it was clogged up right there at the line of scrimmage. And then all of a sudden, Gabe Jackson pried open the shoulder of the defensive lineman and then went up to the second level, and it's like the floodgates opened. And then Chris was able to get through that hole. So that type of stuff is beautiful. And the cool thing would be able to break that down for people to understand that it wasn't just big guys pushing against big guys and all of a sudden the hole came open. Like, there's technique and a plan and strategy to it all. And I think that piece of it Gabe brings to this team in a way that they haven't had it here before. Mm.
Ray, something that we talked about all last season was, hey, even when things were going successfully offensively, there was not this connectivity that you and I wanted to see fully, which always made you somewhat uneasy about sustainability, but also just, in terms of playoff-level football, you got to have both elements working together. I have to imagine, when you were watching this offense come week one against the Colts, that you were just salivating seeing that connectivity of Shane Waldron's offense.
Well, absolutely. Like, last year the term we were using was marrying the run game to the defense, to the pass game. And I felt bad because I didn't bring a wedding gift to the studio with me because it looked It was beautiful. It was a beautiful thing, man. When you see the pre-snap motion, and then the at the snap movement that's happening, and you can't tell if it's the run or the pass, and then they ran the ball and passed the ball off of all that same motion. It just looked like a match made in heaven. This downhill, a lot of movement, eye candy, if you want to call it, in the backfield that kind of creates lanes for guys to run, but then also. Russell can pull the ball and throw it. To me, it was a beautiful thing. And then my biggest fear was that, okay, last year they also started the season out throwing a bunch of screens, and then they all of a sudden got away from it. And so my fear is that they get away from all that stuff, but I don't feel like Shane is going to do that. So I was jumping for joy to see it, and I was anticipating that happening just from what we saw in training camp. Because it really truly does make the defense have to defend the entire field. And so whether you're running the ball, if it's a short pass, intermediate pass, deep passes, screens, little dump offs, the running game, the fly sweep, all of that stuff makes the defense. They have to, if they want to get after Russell, if they want to pin their ears back and get after Russell Wilson in the passing game, they have to earn the right to do that. And if they can get through all of those motions and movements and different things they're doing in the passing game to get you in a third and long situation where they can just pin their ears back and go for it, then more power to them. But I just think the way that the offense looked the first week, and I know that that's only a small part of what they're what's in the package. I think it can be a beautiful thing for the rest of the season.
It sure can. It was really awesome to see. Love the way you summarized it there too. He is Ray Roberts. You can hear him this weekend on the Seahawks pre and post game show and every Thursday on the Huddle. Thanks for joining us today, Ray.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy talking to you.
Thanks,
always,
Ray.
Always. See you, Ray. All right. Now we're going to be taking a step across enemy lines. We're going to have Ben Arthur, who's a former Seahawks reporter. He's reporting on the Titans right now, so offer us some unique insight. Before that, though, we're talking with the voice of the Seahawks himself, Steve Rabel. He joins us next on The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You are listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We're joined now by the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Rabes, how are you?
I'm great, guys. How are you doing?
Very excited to return to see the Seahawks at Lumen Field with fans in attendance. I mean, you were doing this all last year at home with no fans there. Are you excited to have them back?
Absolutely. It was actually even kind of fun, and I use that term loosely because I'm sitting, a few feet away from Dave Wyman.
Apologies.
So
yes.
So, but
Steve, I'm here, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, we know.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
I have feelings also.
I know you do, even though you're a defensive player. I know you do. But there was this sense that just being in the stadium, watching the team there at Indianapolis, and it was so many, obviously, of Colts fans, but a huge number of Seahawks fans in the stadium. And all you had to do was listen for a big touchdown. And by the end of the game, it was nothing but Hawks fans left at Lucas Oil. So it's just going to be fun to having 12s back again this week. And listen, let's face it, if anybody has any question about how important the 12s are, the fans are to the Seahawks, just look at the fact that they've won 17 of their last 18 home openers. I mean, that should say it all right there, that, yes, the teams have been good, but when you got that kind of support in your home stadium, you have a really good chance of winning.
We've noticed that over the last 3 or 4 years, Rabes, that the Seahawks fans, and I mean this in a totally complimentary way, is that they've become those annoying fans that go on the road, like the Toronto Blue Jay fans here.
The Boston fans that I had to experience at T-Mobile
Park.
Oh, they
were sitting right behind us.
Gosh.
Yeah, so, I mean, and not only that, Rabes, I mean, you look, and we've been to all these stadiums, especially down in Arizona, those bright green or action green jerseys, those really stand out. So I'm very proud of our fans.
Well, and you don't.
They've become annoying.
Exactly. And you don't have to go to another NFL stadium. Remember a couple of years ago, it seems like a lifetime ago now, but that we went to London.
Yeah.
And it was like a home game at Wembley Stadium.
That's right.
And to see all of the Seahawks fans, both from this country and from all over Europe, that came down to see that game. So, yeah, the Seahawks travel well, as they say.
Lots of Germans. A lot of Germans. Like, remember their fan, their 12 club or whatever was
Yes.
It was like 170,000 people or something
that. Right. Well, what? And lots of Brits as well.
Yeah.
We went to a couple of their big kind of parties that they had there in London before the game. And it was fun. It was great seeing all those folks and talking to them. And, man, they listened to every word. Not that I say, but that Dave says.
Of course. Yeah, that's the thing we know now. That two things that Germans love. David Hasselhoff
and Dave Wyman
and
Dave
Seahawk fans. Oh. Yeah, and Seahawks or Steve Rabel, actually. Yes. You're right up there with David Hasselhoff.
Yes. Oh, great.
Rabes, it's going to be amazing to get fans back in the stands, as we talked about. But what player do you think is going to feed off of that energy the most? What player are you excited to watch interact with these fans?
Well, you know, as Dave will tell you as well, I think the defense certainly has the advantage when the home team, the home field is behind them. And you got to think that it's going to be the guys coming off the edge that get the jump. Those tackles are just listening. And I always think back to that New York Giants game. Gosh, maybe it was back in 2013, might have been the Super Bowl year, where their tackle just kept rocking back in his stance, and there was something like 6 or 7 false start penalties because of the crowd. And Eli Manning just kind of threw his hands up in the air half a dozen times because he could not be heard by his offensive linemen. That has got to help Rasheem Green, Darrell Taylor. It's got to help Carlos Dunlop. Those pass rushers coming off the edge, Jamal as well, only maybe to a little bit lesser extent. This has got to be great for them to come home and have this crowd behind them.
Is there a player you think could surprise Seahawks fans this year?
Well, I think we've already, I don't know if we've been surprised by Darrell Taylor. We just didn't see him at all last season, at least defensively. You know, he was nursing that fractured leg and had a rod put in it, and they kept saying, you know, yeah, he may be able to get back by the end of the season, and perhaps by the playoff game he was almost ready to play. But now he's had this whole off season to prepare, get stronger, get ready, and what he's done, at least as we've watched in preseason games, he's looked really good. He had a sack. Carson Wentz is still kind of shaking his head saying, where did he come from and get the license plate of the bus that just hit me? Because he leveled him. And those are the kinds of things that you hope to see out of a second-year guy. You know, sometimes rookies don't know what they don't know. But now he's already 2 years in, even though he didn't play. I feel pretty certain that he could have a really good year.
By the way, that was my tribute to Norm MacDonald, who passed away. Remember, he would always say, Germans love David Hasselhoff. Rabes, I thought Brian Monet was maybe, you know, we talked about it earlier. I mean, he's been one of those guys that I think it's been hard for Seahawk fans to figure out. Why do they like this guy? And I think it's because defensive tackles don't, you know, they just don't flash typically, unless you're an Aaron Donald or Cortez Kennedy. But what they do is the grunt work and all of the hard work inside. And I thought it was really nice to see him. Remember the play where he picked Jonathan Taylor up off the ground and his feet were still moving?
Exactly.
You know, it was like a little kid. Like, where are you going, little mister? I'm going to pick you up and slam you on the ground. But, you know, that I thought he, D-line definitely was a highlight. And for a big guy who doesn't get a lot of props, I loved seeing him make some plays.
Well, you said the fact that the Seattle fans are kind of trying to figure out, you know, how he does what he does and all that. I'm still trying to figure out how this guy ended up being a free agent coming out of college. I mean, when you look at just his size coming out of Michigan, he's 345 pounds, and that was probably a couple of stacks of pancakes ago. So he is a huge man. He's got good feet, and he's just that big space eater in the middle that you really need on a defense, the way Pete wants to play defense. And, of course, this year, you know, they're kind of smashing down a little bit, to take one of your terms, on that defensive front, closing down those gaps a little across the front, the center guard gaps. And I think it's just going to make it that much more difficult to run the football. Now, we'll find out how effective it is, because you're going against the two-time defending rushing champ in Derrick Henry this week. Yeah. And he tends to get most of his yards bouncing outside, and he's got deceptive speed, but he is a load to bring down. So this is going to be a real test for the defense.
Rabes, you've seen a lot of great offensive football. You've seen great moments here in Seattle, but there seemed to be something different about this group that we saw week 1 and had a lot of Seahawks fans excited. What was your perspective on witnessing this offense under Shane Waldron? What stood out to you?
Well, It's interesting, Jape, and I just got done talking, as a matter of fact, literally 10 minutes ago, to Dwayne Brown, going to be a part of the Seahawks Saturday Night Show for us. And I sort of asked him, you know, after the offseason that you guys had, and then, of course, you know, he was not on the field during much of the practice sessions during training camp, but did it surprise you how well this kind of new-look offense came out and performed? And he said, no, not at all. He said, we really had a great feeling about this as the pieces started coming together. So I guess what I'm saying is what surprised me the most is how well they all played together that very first game. Mm-hmm. But then again, when you've got, you know, a franchise quarterback and Russell Wilson, you know, pulling the trigger back there, you should expect that at the very least, he's not going to make mental mistakes. And you practice it enough, and we didn't see much of it in preseason because we never saw the starters, but you know that they were going over and over and over, and it seemed like Russ always had some place to go with the ball. There was never a time it didn't feel like to me, I know he got hit and sacked a couple times, but that he didn't have a place to go with the football, and he was scanning to find those places. One of them took him, what, 65 yards downfield to Tyler. But a number of them took them to little dump-off passes in the flat here or there. So I guess that's what's impressive about this offense and how it's only the first game, how much better they can be as the season goes on.
He is the voice of the Seahawks, Steve Rabel. Rabes, I can't wait to hear you on the call. Again, I apologize that you're going to have to be next to Wyman for the entire game. My thoughts are with you at this
time.
Well,
bless you for that.
Anytime.
I probably give Dave too much trouble. So I should apologize.
I do have feelings, Steve. You have to remember that.
I do, Dave.
Thanks, Rabes.
Thanks, guys. See you later.
All right. He is Steve Rabel, joins us every Thursday for the huddle, and obviously you can hear him on the call this Sunday. I have plenty of questions about the Titans. I know you guys have plenty of questions about the Titans, so we can understand the opponent a little bit more. Thankfully, we're going to have some help doing it. Ben Arthur, who reports on the Titans for the Tennessean, going to join us next.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. The Seahawks are facing the Titans for their home opener this Sunday. So for a look at the Titans, a look ahead to this Sunday matchup, we are bringing on Ben Arthur of the Tennessean. He covers the Titans out in Nashville. And also, Ben used to report on the Seahawks. So some really unique insight here. First of all, Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
We're excited to have you on. I mean, it's a really unique kind of insight into this because you have a very recent history of covering Seattle, and then now you're covering Tennessee. So it's kind of nice to be able to see how you think these two teams match up. So I'll start with a really obvious question. It's a big answer. There's a lot of answers, but I'll start with it. What the heck happened to the Titans in week one? It was an abysmal performance against the Cardinals.
Yeah, it was pretty darn bad. A lot of people out here are upset, and for good reason. I mean, there's a lot of talk of this Titans offense on paper maybe being the most talented in franchise history, and that's Titans or Oilers history. So, you know, it was pretty inexcusable. A lot of finger pointing to look at there. I think the first thing you have to look at is the lack of practice time that this first team Titans offense had. I mean, you know, Julio Jones missed a ton of time, and he's, you know, working with a new quarterback. AJ Brown was in and out of practices. This starting offensive line really only had a handful of practices together before this opener against Arizona. So I think that's number one. But then within that, right, I think you have to start with the offensive line. You know, Ryan Tannehill did not have time to do anything because his guys, his tackles, his guards, everyone they weren't doing their job. Like, I think Taylor Lewan is kind of the most notable example of just being beat so easily off of the edge by Chandler Jones. Lewan's a guy who's coming off a torn ACL, and you know, it's a tough first ask, you know, your first game since tearing your ACL the previous season to go up against Chandler Jones. But you know, the way he looked, that you certainly can't make excuses for that. And then they just couldn't get into their run game. And this Titans offense, as many people know from afar, is centered around Derrick Henry and establishing the run and working that play action off of establishing the run. And when you can't, when your O-linemen aren't able to do their job run blocking and to create those lanes for Derrick, I think you kind of get the downward spiral where you can't really do much of anything because you're the very heart of your offense, Derrick Henry, you're not getting him going. And so I think you look at the issues for the Titans, I think you have to look at that offensive line play.
Yeah, and Ben, it sounds like, so first of all, Taylor Lewan, he wasn't playing in the preseason because he'd had an ACL. And I think it was Mike Keith that told us, you know, Quisenberry, who's the right tackle, was playing left. And also, didn't they have some COVID things? I mean, as far as the offensive line goes, where they missed some time, it sounded like they were kind of disjointed and a lot because of, you know, things that are going off, you know, whether it's an injury or a COVID restriction.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a lot of different things. I mean, you start with Taylor. He did get a little bit of time in that last preseason game, but it was really just a couple series. It was just him to kind of get his feet under him before that week one game. But obviously, he was limited basically the entire summer up until the final 2 weeks of the preseason. So there was that, and then the COVID, the Titans had a COVID situation during the summer to an outbreak. They had at one point, I want to say 12, 13 members of their, you know, organization that includes coaches on the COVID list. And two of the guys on that list were their starting center and their starting right guard. And so those two guys, Ben Jones being the center, the right guard being Nate Davis, they didn't get back into practice until the Wednesday before the Arizona game. So there was that whole mess. And then, you know, with the right tackle spot, it's that was kind of like the one spot on the O-line where there were kind of concerns going into the season. They basically had three veterans competing at that spot. And then two of the veterans at that spot at different times this summer were dealing with injuries and they weren't able to play. So it was a lot of things, right? It was Lewan's ACL situation. It was the COVID mess that happened. And then also, you know, just other injuries took place as well. So all of it made for sort of a disjointed and you know, a Titans offensive line that just didn't have much playing time together heading into that Arizona game.
Ben, obviously the focus has been on the Titans offense, and rightfully so. It is the strength of that team. It's one of the reasons why everybody was so excited and hyped up about the Titans this year and their chances. But what about the defense? The defense has continued to struggle. They struggled mightily against the Cardinals. They were a bottom-end unit last year, and it's very odd to have that be the case with such a defensive-minded head coach and Mike Vrabel. What are some of the issues there on the defense side of the ball for the Titans?
Yeah, I think, first of all, with the Titans' defense, they're working in a lot of new starters. So, as you mentioned, yeah, that unit last year was pretty bad. They had a historically, they were worst in the league in third down efficiency. Like, it was historically bad. They were giving up nearly a 52% conversion rate on third down, and they only had 19 sacks last year, which was tied for the worst for like a playoff team in NFL history. So it was pretty bad. They overhauled the defensive side of the ball. They have six new starters, including, you know, Bud Dupree. But he's the thing with Dupree, and similar to Lewan on the offensive side, is, you know, Dupree is coming back from a torn ACL. He only played a handful of games with the Steelers last year. And so he's at a point where he's not at 100%. You have one of their key inside linebackers, Jayon Brown, you know, one of their top cover guys. He missed a lot of time last year on IR. He's one of their key guys in the middle there. And then with that secondary, three of the four secondary guys in that base look are new. The only one returning into the starting lineup is Kevin Byard. So a lot of kind of new faces, still a lot of chemistry that kind of needs to be worked out. They did make positive strides in the summer over the preseason, for whatever that's worth. They were pretty dominant, actually, and third down was, as you can imagine, it was a very big emphasis heading into this season. But as we saw against the Cardinals, they're just not there yet. And I think going up against an offense like Arizona and with a quarterback as mobile and as shifty as Kyler Murray, I don't know that there are other mobile quarterbacks, but I don't know that there's one as shifty as Kyler Murray. That was very hard for the Titans to contain. I mean, even when they did get good pressure, Kyler was able to sort of elude that and make something out of nothing on third down. Three of the Cardinals' four passing touchdowns came on third down, so that was a backbreaker for the Titans. And so, yeah, so heading into this game with the Seahawks, going up against another phenomenal mobile quarterback in Russ, I don't know how much can change defensively in a seven-day span. So kind of going back to the offense, I think it's really going to depend on the offense to kind of get it turned around, because I think this defense could be better later in the season. But with how many new guys you're still working in, and some of those new guys you have were still kind of coming back from injuries, it's kind of hard to imagine the Seahawks not putting up a lot of points at Lumen Field on Sunday.
Good news for Seattle, but definitely a big task for the defense to stop their weapons. He is Ben Arthur, a Titans beat reporter for the Tennessean. If you want to follow him for updates during the game, Seahawks fans, you can on Twitter at Ben Y. Arthur. Also, since all of you listening are Seahawks fans, he's got a really cool interview with DK Metcalf that's pinned right at the top, a really cool look into his background. So not just Titans news there. Thanks so much, Ben.
Thank you, Stacey. Thanks for having me on.
See ya. All right. Now we're going to kind of like wrap things up, take a look ahead. You guys, I've been seeing so many questions about playing specifically in the rain, so we are going to mention that. I know that some people have full confidence, but Jake, I'll probably throw that one to you specifically. So we'll come back with our keys to the game, with our final thoughts on the game ahead of this week 2 matchup between the Seahawks and Titans. This is The Huddle.
This is The Huddle. Every Thursday from noon to 2 on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. We are getting you guys ready for the Seahawks home opener, week 2, against the Tennessee Titans. It's a return to Lumen Field for fans for the first time in a year. As a reminder, make sure to bring your masks. Regardless of your vaccination status, you will need a mask, and you'll also need proof of vaccination if you are over 12 years old to enter. If you're under 12, thank you for listening. Stay in school. I'm really proud of you.
Yeah, don't. All the things that I say,
yeah,
don't you kids do that.
Listen, don't listen to Wyman. If you're over 12, you will need proof of vaccination, or you need a negative COVID test result taken 72 hours. So make sure if you won't have a vaccination card, get out there today to take your test. I want to make sure we get to our thoughts and kind of how we're wrapping up with the day, but I have seen so many questions on Twitter over the course of the last couple days about poor weather this weekend. It could be raining on Sunday. How much harder does that make it? A question for both of you in terms of both your pass game and also tackling.
Well, linebacker, you know, doesn't affect me too much. You know, it's funny, I don't remember playing in the rain that much. Now,
what?
Obviously, I was playing in the Kingdome for most of my career, but like in, you know, on the road and stuff, I don't remember. I remember in Denver one time it rained the weather in Denver can change like within an hour, drop like 40 degrees. But I remember it rained the whole first half, and then the second half it was snowing and frozen. So that was difficult, you know. But, I mean, as far as ball security goes and things like that.
Yeah.
By the way, Darius Leonard, that was just a lucky punch out. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I don't see anything that Carson did. And the reason why I'm bringing it up is just because you're going to have a slippery football. So
right.
you got to have ball security. And you know, the Seahawks gave up, and they went even in the turnover ratio. By the way, the Titans were like number one in turnover ratio last year.
They were. They were. So. I think they had 20. They had 20 turnovers or over 20 turnovers in total, and they had 13 interceptions.
And they only had 12 giveaways, and that's the big part of it, right? Right.
Yeah, they were amongst the best in turnover ratio. But a big part of that was cornerback Malcolm Butler, and he's no longer on the team. So when Ben Arthur, you know, who we were talking about, this last segment, talking about how there's so much turnover on defense, there's six new defensive starters, some of those struggles are from talent, and some of those struggles are just not being on the same page. And that's something that stood out to me as I'm watching the film of the Tennessee Titans, you know, of this last week against the Cardinals. That's something that doesn't get solved and fixed in a week. Mm-hmm. And we had that experience here in Seattle as well, and it took nearly half the season to get that corrected and get that right. So the Seahawks offense, obviously, with the weather, with that being into consideration, you have to take care of the football. You have to protect the football. Turnover margin is huge in the game. But it's also an opportunity for you to continue to keep stacking really good performances together offensively against a unit that's really struggling. That's what ultimately I want to see out of the Seahawks offense.
Yeah, what we learned today, too, I'll say, like Ben said, there could be some nice opportunities here for Russell Wilson in the offense to put up points against a Tennessee defense that's struggling, like you said, Jake, to get on the same page. Defensively, you've got to keep their best weapons at bay. I don't know about you guys. I'm sure that you feel the same. I'm not expecting a repeat horrible performance on offense. I think there's plenty of room for improvement. Yeah. And it's hard not to imagine that one of the trio of A.J. Brown, Derrick Henry, or Julio Jones can't come in and potentially have a big day. So what then becomes the most important parts of this game for Seattle's defense?
Yeah, well, I'll start with I think those three guys – we would all agree they're extra meeting guys.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
And that's the thing when you look at, you know, some Russell's an extra meeting guy. Mm-hmm. DK, probably maybe Lockett too. But, you know, how are you going to handle these guys? So, you know, you wonder if maybe you're going to get help over the top. Make sure, you know, all your underneath droppers, meaning, you know, linebackers and safeties, make sure you get deep drops so you're helping out the corners. And then, you know, with Derrick Henry, I mean, you just have to be physical. You have to come downhill, you know, and just smash mouth football. So, and I'm sure he's going to be running hard. And that was, you know, one of the things I thought last year, early on, especially, they were more of a finesse defense than a hit you in the mouth defense. So, and we saw a little bit of that. I thought the D-line was really good. The D-line can get him before he gets going. That'd be nice.
I mean, but we're laughing, but it's exactly what Arizona did. You had the stats about his first half, and they held him to something like 56 or 58 yards on the ground for the day, and that was a big part of it.
Yeah, 8 yards on 9 carries in the first half.
Wild.
So, yeah, and then, you know, pretty good third quarter. But, yeah, that's something that hopefully this D-line will be able to get going. I thought also the fact that the D-line is so deep, like the rotation, you can put any group in there and feel pretty comfortable.
For Seattle?
Yeah. for the Seahawks. So, yeah, I thought that group really stood out. And again, I think Daryl Taylor could be that dynamic guy. But how about Ryan Tannehill? You know, that's another story. We didn't even talk about him, but, I mean, he had one winning season in Miami. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it has to do with who he was surrounded by and everything. But, you know, he kind of has resurrected his career there. And, you know,
Certainly has.
Didn't have a great – I mean, it's nice he has those weapons, but I feel like he was just an okay franchise quarterback with Miami, and then he goes to Tennessee and starts to win, and I feel like he's got the right formula there.
He does, and Stacy brought this up during Jake and Stacy earlier today, is the fact that, you know, he has been able to have a resurrection of his career, but at the same time, they just changed offensive coordinators, who was Arthur Smith, who's now the head coach at the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, it's a former tight ends coach now.
He was a big reason why they were successful on offense, and now can the former tight end coach mm-hmm. step in as the OC and carry on that mantle and carry on that tradition that they've been able to develop offensively over the past two seasons. That remains to be seen. They certainly have the weaponry, but the one thing that the Cardinals did so well, the Seahawks did so well against Carson Wentz, was the consistent and constant pressure. Don't let those guys get comfortable. They are good quarterbacks. If you give them time, they are good enough to beat you. But if you get in their face, if you rattle them a little bit, speaking as a former quarterback, it changes your eyes. It changes the way you feel the game and how comfortable you sit in that pocket. So if the Seahawks can recreate that, that's going to be a tremendous step for them to show that consistent pass rush I think that that will be something I will be definitely keeping an eye for.
All right, let's just do like a basic keys to the game, and it's just a way to summarize up a lot of these points anyways. I'll go first with a very, very basic one, which you could say is the key to the game anytime, but the Cardinals had a ton of success with it. So that's specifically converting on third down and the red zone. I'd love to see it be a key to the game for this one, just because it's a basic football principle, like a fundamental thing to do, but also because of the recent opportunity Arizona had to be so effective there. They were 54% on third down and 80% in the red zone. And lastly, Seattle actually struggled there last year. No matter how effective their offense was early in the season, they finished with record numbers from their two wide receivers from Russell Wilson, but they still weren't great on third down. So I would love to see that continue.
Yeah, well, I think they can take advantage of this defense. You mentioned the six new players that Ben Arthur told us about. I guess last year they were dead last in third down conversion, their defense, 52% they were giving up. And then they had... it was either 17 or 19 sacks that they got, which is interesting because Jadeveon Clowney was on that D-line right. for a little while, and it's like that guy just sucks the sacks out of the room for whatever reason. I mean, the same thing, you know, in 2019, the Seahawks had 28 sacks, which isn't as bad. I mean, they're in the teens. I think it was 17 or 19. You know, that's terrible. So, I mean, not a lot of pass rush there and not very good on third down, so... You know, if the Seahawks defense, you know, gets taken advantage of a little bit by these guys, they come back and you know, it might be a shootout. It might be that kind of game. But I have a lot of confidence in the offense, and I'd say going in, if you ask me which side of the ball I have more confidence in, it's the offense.
Yeah. Jake, I'm awful and I left you like 30 seconds.
That's okay. I can handle it. All right. I'm a quarterback. We can audible, we
there
can make
this
happen. So I walk into the same situation as Dave. If you would have told me before the season started what's this game gonna be like, I would have said a shootout. But the way the defense played last week against the Colts, against a really good running game in Jonathan Taylor, it really encouraged me. You obviously see the Tennessee Titans really struggle offensively, the offensive line. I believe those things are real, and I don't believe that you can just change those things in a week with a limited amount of practice time. So I think this game ultimately comes down to how well the Seahawks defense plays, how good that front seven plays, and can they limit Derrick Henry from being a true difference maker in the game? Tremendous task, nearly impossible, but the Cardinals showed that they could do it. They gave them the formula, and if the Seahawks can replicate that aspect of it, you might have another very comfortable win for the Seahawks.
All right, that is The Huddle with Dave Wyman, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Ross. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed our two-hour preview of this upcoming Week 2 matchup. Make sure to bring the energy. It's the home opener this Sunday.